This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We are normally here, I would be saying, let's do this Chris Harrington deal. And we'd be hearing some music that Chris Harrington played and had chosen for us and et cetera. But right now, we are having some difficulties getting hold of Chris Harrington. We are hopeful that we will get Chris Harrington to talk about the Grizzlies here in the next segment. Do we have, like, the music and stuff, Jeffrey? I guess we kind of said it. All right, let's do this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. We discover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is If Six Was Nine by Jimi Hendrix, in honor of the Grizzlies' six-game win streak and the chances of making it longer.
So we talked about the Grizzlies' four-game homestand and how they would do and whether 3-1 was acceptable. You and Jeffrey both, I think, said it would be, and they end up going 4-0. You were here for all of it, I believe. I did wonder if today you would be making your way back to the Twin Cities and if it would be a blizzard conditions as you are making your way back to the Twin Cities. Where are you?
I'm home. I was not at the game yesterday. We came back yesterday.
I see.
So, I'm home. And it actually did snow overnight. There was no snow last night when we got in, but there was snow overnight. Not much. Some of the dusting, maybe an inch or so, but we do have snow on the ground.
All right. A little snow on the ground. All right, Grizzlies go 4-0 on the homestand. They have a six-game winning streak. What struck you? What has struck you?
A couple things that have struck me, and I wrote about today a column that will go up at some point today, sort of my weekly column that I do, is the improved play of Marcus Smart and Brandon Clark. Obviously, you get John Morant back. And, you know, John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jared Jackson all together, and that's your starting point for what you're trying to do with the Grizzlies. But I think, you know, Marcus Smart and Brandon Clark are important players, or were supposed to be important players on this team, and they both get off to a really bad start at the beginning of the season, and they both played great in the last week or so, and I think that's a big part of it. The Marcus Smart thing's been a little bit noisier. The Detroit game, the win over Detroit, was very much the Marcus Smart game, but I think consistently those two guys have been really good.
So last week, I think, in your weekly column, you pointed out that – to the extent that there were concerns about the Grizzlies, it was this middle class of Marcus
right.
Smart and Brandon Clark and Luke Kennard, Santi Benifi, whatever. And you're exactly right. So then the Detroit game was, I mean, that was a Marcus Smart production, was it not?
100%. That was the Marcus Smart game. We may not see another one quite like that.
Okay, but what's he doing well? And he has seemingly adjusted very nicely to coming off the bench.
Yeah, you know, his feel for the game is really coming through. We'll see about the shooting. I think his shooting was abnormally bad at the start of the season. It's been a little bit above what you would expect since then. Since he's come off the bench, he's shooting 49% from the floor and 40% from three. Those numbers are going to come down. But it's all the other stuff I think you can depend on. It's the defense. It's the playmaking on both ends of the floor, the passing, the ball handling, the generating steals. Just his feel for the game, his feel for just making plays. That's sort of why you trade for Marcus Smart, yeah. Right? I mean, it's he's not the smoothest athlete. He's not the smoothest shooter, but he knows how to play basketball on both ends of the floor. It reminds me a little bit about my old favorite, Kyle Anderson. He doesn't rebound like that, and there are different, like, body types. But the play is kind of similar. Like, you know, generate steals, pass the ball, have a feel for the game, and just do stuff. And Marcus Smart just has a tendency to do stuff on the floor. Sometimes it's bad, but a lot of times it's good. And even when he's played poorly, the Grizzlies have won his minutes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he obviously sort of replaced Dylan Brooks, kind of, as the defensive stopper anyway, right? As that was partly the idea. But they are alike in that they can each frustrate you when they launch a three, right? But right. It feels like Marcus Smart has an immeasurably better feel for the game, certainly. He's more of a connector, I guess. Dylan Brooks was never a connector.
100%. And I think, I think Taylor Jenkins said something I thought was interesting, and this sort of brought to mind the Kyle Anderson comment, which I make in the column today. He talked about, I asked him about playing Smart and Pippen and Ja all together, which he's done some. And he said, those are the three guys who really push our pace, who want to push our pace. Well, if you think about Marcus Smart, you don't think about fast.
Right.
He's not fast. But if you look at, the team pace number when individual players are on the floor, sure enough, the fastest on the team among rotation players is Marcus Smart. And it's for the same reasons the pace number was always high with Kyle Anderson, even though he was slow.
Right.
Because he can see stuff happening. He was really aggressive, both really aggressive about pushing the ball off the floor in transition, making the hit-ahead pass, getting the ball out quickly, both good at generating steals, which sort of generates pace, and just seeing stuff other guys don't see. So the team, I think, has played at a better pace with Marcus Smart. But in the half court, it seems to me, he's really picking up the cutting and passing stuff they're trying to do in the half court pretty well, and he's been effective in that kind of stuff too.
It was interesting to see those three playing together. What did you? How much have we seen it, and what do you expect to see much more going forward?
Well, I think part of it is just that, you want to Smart and Pippen both. You want them both to play. When you have all three of those guys, it's sort of hard to get minutes for all three of them unless you're playing, portions of them together. I do think Smart can defend up. Smart can defend bigger guys. There was a play in that Detroit game where Isaiah Stewart, a guy whose nickname is literally Beef Stew, got Marcus Smart pinned right in front of the rim, 1-on-1, and could not score on Marcus Smart. So it's easier to play them together when Smart can play up and he can defend bigger guys. And so I think it's a matter of just trying to get guys on the floor in part. And, this is going to be a tricky thing for the Grizzlies if they maintain any kind of reasonable health going forward, obviously.
Well, yeah, the tricky thing is when everyone comes back, right? I mean, if they do, when Vince comes back and Gigi comes back and Zach comes back, I mean, it is kind of amazing they're doing what they're doing and they're still not close to full strength. Okay, you mentioned Brandon Clark, less noisy. What have we seen from Brandon?
The first four games of the season, he shot 30% from the floor. And in the last five games, he's shooting 80-something percent. The second part is more like Brandon Clark we're used to.
Right.
I think part of that, I'm wary of the idea of it's the old Brandon Clark. I don't think it's the old Brandon Clark. I don't think he is as athletic or explosive as he was. And in fact, I looked this up. He has 8 dunks in 20 games this season. 2 years ago, the year, before he had the injury, he had 52 dunks in 56 games. It was more like one a game, and now it's less than half a dunk a game. So I think that, and just watching him play, he's not as explosive as he was. But I think he's getting more comfortable. And I think he's getting more comfortable both with his physical limitations and with the offense. And he's just getting into open spaces better and getting a rhythm. And I think he's just found a way to be effective both in the offense and when with his where he is physically. And one thing that's happened, I think it's a byproduct of getting more comfortable in the offense, is he stopped taking threes. Completely. The last five games, he's taken 0. He was 1 of 16 before then, and 0 of 0 since then. And I think that's part of his success. And I suspect there was conversation about him not taking threes, but he's still operating out of the corners. It's just that now he's getting more comfortable, put the ball on the floor, drive, screen, pass. You don't have to take the shot just because the ball hits your hands,
And I don't think you included Santi as being part of the middle class that was...
No, he's a different category.
But he's a different category, but he's been good too, you know, in a little less bipolar, you know, performances.
He had his own little shooting slump in the middle of the season. And he's come out of that this week too and played very well. And so you look at that game against New Orleans where it was, you know, a lot of these games where the Grizzlies win, they win big. That's sort of been part of what they've done this season. And that New Orleans game was like a 10-point game with 6 minutes to go. Like, that was the game still up for grabs. And so they cycled back to like a closing lineup, which they haven't really done a lot this season. We haven't really had a chance to test that very much. And when they cycled back to what their closing lineup was going to be, it was the big three, as you would expect. And instead of Miles and Clark who started, it was Smart and Aldama who finished. And so I think, you know, that's why I don't, to me, the starting, not starting thing is not that big of a deal outside the top three. Because you just can cycle to what you want to get to. And you know, I think right now, I mean, obviously, you know, Zach Edey's out, other guys are out. But right now, I think the starting lineup is working. And I think the top reserves, not necessarily always the sixth and seventh guys off the bench, but effectively the top reserves are Marcus Smart and Santi Aldama. I think that's really the core seven right now.
Last week you wrote about Ja's defense being the best that it has been, and that continued certainly last night and has really continued throughout.
Yeah, this is something that I think is starting to get some notice. And I think early in the season there was a week where you were out of town and I was just on with Jeffrey. Jeffrey and I talked about this. And so I think this, and he had noticed the same thing. So I think this is something that has sort of been there from the jump. But, you know, he was injured, now he's come back, and people are starting to talk about it a little bit more. And I think this has been part of the story of Morant this season. I think he is playing maybe his best basketball he's ever played. Even though there's not that big of a difference in the scoring and the shooting hasn't come around, I think it's because of the passing and the defense. Those two things are at an all-time best.
So do you think the lack of mega minutes and therefore lack of just raw numbers is going to hurt them in their national perception, and do you think they care?
I think it could. I think right now Ja's also missed a lot of games.
Right.
So that's part of what's kept him out of the conversation. If you listen to NBA pods, they're talking about like early MVP, early All-NBA, early All-Star. The thing keeping Ja out of that right now is missed games, not minutes per game. I think over the course of the season, if that gets corrected, I think at the margins it can. I think at some point, with Jaren, it's always hard. Jaren, because people look at the minutes and say, that's because he can't stay on the floor, even though that's not true. But people say that about Jaren. I can say that about Ja. Like, if they're both averaging 29 minutes a game, people will say, Jared can't stay on the floor. They're not going to say that about Ja.
Right.
So we'll see. I think it could at the margins, but I think if the Grizzlies are, like, second or third in the West, and these guys are awesome at 29 minutes a game, I think they'll power through that.
So, early on in the season, when you asked the question of Taylor Jenkins about the minutes and how much of it was injury and how much of it was, you know, approach, and he then indicated a lot of it's not just injury, it's approach, right? And they are obviously, like last night, Bane had 30, everyone else, you know, Brandon 24, Jaren 29, Wells 26, Ja 27, Santi 25, Laravia 22, Marcus 23.
Yeah. This is what they're doing.
This is what they're doing. And it seems to be working. Let's be honest. They've won six in a row. Now they're going to have stiffer competition. Do you think this is what they will do throughout the regular season? I mean, who knows? It's a long time from now, right? But do you imagine that when you get into the playoffs, this is still what they're going to be doing?
I haven't had a chance to look at it compared to other teams in the league, so can't say for certain that this is true. But I suspect they've played fewer close games than most teams in the league. Almost all their wins are like by double digits. And then like they've lost some games where they sort of, you know, things have gone poorly or whatever. I don't think they played a lot of close tight games. And what I wonder about is it's fine to play John Morant 23 minutes when like you don't need him in the last 7 minutes of the game. Right.
Right.
And so what I wonder about is when you get into a tight game, and to me, there's been a couple games like this, and this is where I was critical. If you have a game where the difference between 28 minutes of Ja Morant and 33 minutes of Ja Morant is the difference between winning and losing, I think that's when you hit the gas and you get your 33 minutes or 34 or whatever of Ja Morant. The fact that you don't need it every night makes you able to get it every once in a while without it doing that much impact, right? So to me, that's the question, is what's going to happen when they get into more tight games where their best guys are playing well and there is a difference, and that difference may be determined in the outcome. And that just hasn't been tested that much.
Do you think it's driven by health/load management or pace strategy, or do those converge?
Well, it's been a little bit of both, but I think they're starting to diverge because, I mean, Jaren, you know, had a hamstring injury and missed the first two games, so there was like a injury maintenance thing initially with him. You know, Desmond Bane has come off an injury. John Morant's come off a couple, three, really, because he had a sprained ankle in preseason. So there was some of that when he started out, and then he had the bad hip thing, and then he had the knee thing. So if you get a point where, like, you're at this point with Jaren already, but if you get a point with all three of them where, like, they've been healthy for 3 weeks and there's nothing else, like, they are fully recovered from whatever they've been managing, then that's not a factor. I suspect that so I think there's been some of that to this point, but I think the overarching thing is they believe that you play deep, you play fast, you don't play long stretches of heavy minutes, and you stay fresh for 48 minutes, and you overwhelm the other team with your pace and your depth. And, like, guess what? They're 14-7, and, like, you know, I mean, it's working for the most part.
Yeah.
And so the question is that going to work? It gets better competition in the playoffs, all of that. I think that is to be tested. But clearly they have a philosophy about this.
Yeah. Kind of amazing. They're a game and a half behind Oklahoma City, one game back of Houston. Obviously, they've got things get tougher now as they go to Dallas, and then they have games coming up against Boston, Golden State, Suns, Oklahoma City, all before the end of the year. Chris, thank you very much. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. It's cold out. It is cold out. It is the holiday time. All of that is a reason to get to Oak Hall. Buy yourself some luxury vests, cashmere, huge array of vests, multiple styles from Peter Millar, Barber, Steo, just to mention a few. I'll be honest, I have the Steo down jacket that I wear, and I keep the house a little nippy. Jeffrey, it's light, it's beautiful. I wear it around the house. I'm looking my absolute best. But the one holiday shopping tip I have is to get to Oak Hall, because it is the place where holiday shopping feels like it should feel. The clothes are beautiful. The people are incredibly helpful. And you know anything you get there will not just be appreciated, it will be loved, it will be worn, it will serve as a reminder to whoever you give it to of the gift that you gave them, whatever they put it on all season long, plus the free wrapping paper, the free alterations. It is shopping, holiday shopping, the way it should be. And now it's cold, it's beautiful. Get yourself in there and get some luxury at Oak Hall. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers. That is the place. Get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, where they have, it's the place to shop for an engagement ring. And if you're thinking of getting engaged, holiday's a great time to do it. Make everyone happy, brilliant, bursting with happiness, a new future together. And at Robert Irwin Jewelers, where Jeffrey got his ring, where Connor got his ring. Like, we talk about this stuff because people have experienced it here. And among other things, you got the meant-to-be guarantee. So if you buy your engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, 365-day, no questions asked, return policy. You can walk on in, have an idea, have a picture, whatever else. They'll walk you through the process. And then once you get it, you get free ring sizing for life, free jewelry spa service for life. And in fact, the financing's terrific. 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. It's a tradition of trust for more than 46 years here in Memphis, whatever the occasion, holidays, engagements, anniversaries, etc. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, Robert Irwin Jewelers, or online at rijewelers.com. Jeffrey, I want to talk about the NFL in a minute. On the way in, I was listening to Unsportsmanlike, and they were debating whether it's still okay after today. And in fact, on the early word, which is the email you get at the Daily Memphian.
Absolutely.
Right? Because today is Cyber Monday. Today is Cyber Monday, but that's lost all meaning, hasn't it?
I think so.
Cyber Monday, every day is Every day is Cyber Day. So that's lost all meaning. And so Bianca proposed that this be last day of leftovers Monday, or eat all the rest of your leftovers Monday, or whatever. Do you think you can have leftovers and be eating leftovers the Tuesday after Thanksgiving?
I feel like that time has passed.
What do you do if you have leftovers? I'll be honest. I sat down yesterday to a plate of turkey, some Brussels sprouts, some of the sweet potato casserole with the marshmallows on top, which we did not have as a northerner. I didn't have that growing up, and although Claire did, and I appreciated it more because Thanksgiving Day is such a it's so much that you don't really appreciate it, and so I'm like, man, this sweet potato casserole is freaking delicious. I enjoyed it more yesterday than I did on Thursday. And so then Claire's made turkey soup slash chili.
Sure.
That's just a fresh bubbling pot.
That's a whole new meal.
I could eat that tomorrow. Can I?
Yeah, I think it really boils down to, were you the ones doing the cooking?
We did the cooking.
So you're obviously going to have much more leftovers than we did.
We packed a lot off with the boys.
Correct.
You know, send them off as much as possible with the boys. But I don't think... Oh, okay. I think that probably this is the last day to eat leftovers unless you've remade the leftovers into a fresh dish. Like if you've made soup.
Repurposed.
If you've repurposed it into a fresh dish, you can eat that all week long.
By all means.
What was the best thing you ate all weekend long?
Turkey and dressing. My Thanksgiving plate left no doubt. My wife found a video. For those that watch The Bear, Maddie Matheson is kind of a celebrity chef. He's on the show, and he had a video of kind of doing like turkey crab cakes using the dressing, the mashed potatoes, turkey. So we did that.
Really?
Fried that up on Saturday night. That was our Saturday. That basically got rid of Thanksgiving leftovers for us. That was delicious.
All right, in other news that we have not discussed today, we've had a lot of college football, we've had a lot of Grizzlies. Do want to shout out some local high school teams that have advanced to the state championship game, including Mace, Houston, and Melrose.
Yes.
Melrose used to be like a regular participant.
Absolutely.
And it's been decades now, and nice to see Melrose.
They're on the come up.
Beat Pearl Cone 14-7. Houston beat Ravenwood, and Mace rallied 40-34, exciting win over McKenna, I think it is. And so so congratulations to the three local teams that are going to the state championship. Also in college football, we have not talked about it yet much, Jeffrey, but there are various people who have lost their jobs.
Yes,
right?
Black Monday yesterday, felt like.
Neil Brown.
Or Sunday.
Lost his job at West Virginia. Purdue.
Yep, Ryan Walters.
Made the change, Ryan Walters. Mack Brown had already made the change, but they've confirmed he's not going to be coaching in any bowl game at UNC, right? Gus Malzahn did, and this was interesting because he resigned to take the Florida State OC job, and by doing it, UCF evidently doesn't have to do the buyout.
Correct.
It's like a $9 million buyout or something like that, right? So that was, they were rejoicing at UCF over that. A Florida International. Mike McIntyre?
Yep.
Whacked. Temple already has their new hire, KC Keeler, from Sam Houston State. He's one of these guys. He's 65 years old.
Yep.
But he'd won at the...
Delaware, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting to see there's this new trend of hiring coaches who've won championships at lower levels because we've seen it kind of work, right?
Sure.
And so, so Temple has hired their coach. East Carolina...
Promoted
the interim, whatever. It appears that UAB keeping Dilfer?
It seems like the buyout's a problem.
Seems like the buyout is a problem. So you have that. Any of those, when they were hired, what did you think of Malzahn at UCF? And what did you think of Neil Brown at West Virginia? And do you think Malzahn at Florida State is going to make a huge difference?
Yeah, I think what we're starting to see is some of these coaches that are a little bit older and the environment is not what they've come up with, this idea of, okay, I don't like this world, but I do like coaching ball.
I like calling plays.
Correct. And so he's kind of doing essentially what Chip Kelly did to, you know, Chip Kelly coached Ryan Day at New Hampshire. Gus has a previous relationship with Norvell. Like, well, I didn't coach him. Like, they have a pre-existing relationship.
Norvell was on Gus's staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, we see guys that are like, all right, I'm going to go work for a guy that I know, a guy that I trust, and I'm just going to coach ball.
Do you like Gus Malzahn as the play caller for Florida State?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, I've never been like the world's biggest fan of Gus's offense, but if he gets to a place where they
can
run
Mike
the ball,
was a hell of a play caller at once upon a time.
Yeah, I just think like at Florida State, you can probably be more physical than the rest of your league. When Gus is in that situation, his offense works pretty well because even though it's kind of gimmicky and whatnot, it is still kind of a power running game, and you can do that. You can do that with some success at Florida State. So I think overall that was a good hire.
It is interesting. A lot of the changes that were going to be made will not be. We thought at one point Florida was inevitable. Obviously not. We thought Baylor was inevitable. Obviously,
people don't want to pay the buyout right now, yeah. So it has to be kind of a knockout.
So it does raise the question of whether Ryan will be in the mix for other jobs. I don't think there's any doubt that. Listen, Tim Buckley wrote a column over the Daily Memphian about Ryan in the coaching carousel.
Sure,
and he asked Paul Feinbaum. Paul Feinbaum writes a little thing every week for the Daily Memphian, and Tim Buckley asked Paul Feinbaum about this. And he said he should be wary about what happened to the other two coaches who left Memphis, right? And, of course, the answer is no. With all due respect, all they have to do is look at their bank accounts.
Sure.
Like, they would leave again.
Yes.
Even the way it worked for Justin Fuente and the way it worked for Mike Norvell, they would both do it again.
Yeah. And, like, there's also this question with, like, Justin, it's like, how do you like me now? Like, a lot of the problem is guys left for jobs that when they left, they were better jobs than what they've become in this universe. Like,
right.
Like, I think something that's interesting is, would you rather have the North Carolina job or the UCF job?
I'd probably rather have the North Carolina job. People always talk about that job as a sleeping giant.
Yes.
But it's always been sleeping.
Correct.
So how much of a sleeping giant is it really?
Mac Brown is the best coach, and he's the second best coach at North Carolina.
So how much is it really sleeping? On the other hand, how daunting is that conference? I don't know.
I mean, there's also the question of, like, does...
I mean, how much of Gus's, quote-unquote, failure was because they got elevated? Like, if Gus...
100%.
If they had stayed in the American, would Gus have been a failure? No. Probably not. So they get elevated. And so if you're Ryan, there's no doubt in my mind. Like, he can say this is his dream job, which he said, and I you know, what Memphis is. If he is offered North Carolina or UCF, he takes it.
Yes.
Of course he does. He takes it for two reasons. One is, it's going to be more money. Two is, it's a fresh start. You start the clock again. Third is, he undoubtedly feels underappreciated here. 100% he feels underappreciated here. But I'll be honest, even if he felt fully and wholly and totally appreciated here, he would still go for either of those jobs.
I think that's the case. Then you run into, like, what do you do if, like, Purdue comes calling?
I think that's the question. What do you do if Purdue was going to go there?
So
for a
Ryan
job where you're going to get your brains beat in.
Right. So, and I looked, because Mark was texting me. He's like, what would you do with the Purdue job? It's like, okay, I went and looked at their schedule next year. They have...
Aren't they on the right side of the Big Ten?
But so they've gotten rid of divisions.
They don't have any side anymore.
Correct. So now they just split it up and you play the games. Their schedule next year... would basically, you have four winnable games and two, like, for sure wins. So you're going to be in the same spot. And what we've seen is teams that have kind of had the
four winnable includes the two sure wins, or the four winnable plus two sure wins?
Two wins plus two more toss-ups. Oh. Like, you get, like, Rutgers in there. And
here's the thing. If you're Purdue, you look over at Indiana and you think, why can't we be Indiana?
Okay, so that's the thing. It's like, okay, the formula that has worked for schools like Indiana is go get a coach that's at a place that's having success and bring a bunch of players with you. Well, the problem is a lot of the players that you would bring coming from Memphis.
No. Memphis doesn't have a lot of those players.
Right. So, like, you don't, like.
I mean, Seth isn't, you know.
Right. Because of eligibility. Not the eligibility. We're not talking about.
No, it's not that they're not good enough. You know,
correct.
They're done.
Correct.
Yeah.
They're out of eligibility. So, like, that formula is something that I could see Purdue trying. But basically, you have to accept, okay, if I'm taking the Purdue job, this is a one contract job.
I think you also, here's the other thing with there you would have to take a hard look at what do you really feel about your prospects next year. Like, what do you really think about this quarterback? What do you really think about who you have coming? Like, he knows who he's got, you know, who he thinks is coming back. He has a good sense of what his roster might look like next year at Memphis anyway. So does he think he's going to kill it at Memphis, or do you think he's going to take it a step back?
The only flip side I would say is, at least at Memphis, in comparison to the rest of your league,
you have more
league,
money than anybody else.
Correct. So you could reload your roster more quickly and more effectively than your peers.
100%.
I still think that you're going to, even though despite winning on Friday, I still think you're probably behind John Summerall in terms of
in the pecking order.
In the pecking order,
John Summerall's kind of a hot name.
Yeah, I mean,
he's had SEC connections.
You know? Correct. So,
even though you just beat him like a drum,
right? That's not really what's going to matter. I think I would probably say if the only quote unquote better job I could get is Purdue,
yeah, they turned it down.
Yeah.
So if you could take UC, if you could get UCF, and yes. By the way, I do think here's the truth: Memphis fans, there's a portion of Memphis fans that would be very happy if he got that. It would be like, okay. We're out of this awkward situation where people are unhappy with 10 wins, right?
Yep.
And what could then happen is a new coach would come in, and my prediction is they would do less well than Ryan has done this year. They would likely not win 10 games next year, right?
That seems fair.
Likely not. But over the next five, would they get to a conference championship game where Ryan never did? I think the odds are, I would bet yes. So I think they would have a good, but you could also look back at a situation. And by the way, just because when Josh left, people now look back at Josh and say, damn, it doesn't mean they should have kept Josh. It was time for the Josh thing to end when it ended. What they shouldn't have done was hire Tubby.
Yeah, it's a lot like Tennessee when the decision to move on from Phil Fulmer. It's like,
right. It was time to move on from Phil Fulmer.
And then you get
you
left by
didn't
Lane.
Didn't hire the right dude after him.
Right. And well, you got Lane, and maybe
yes,
that
right.
works, and then Lane leaves after a year, and then you wind up in this panic move, and right. you go get Derek Dooley.
Yeah. So, but people now look back at the Josh thing, and I think, and are appreciative, and I think that that's fine, but it doesn't mean it was a mistake to get rid of Josh. It was mean it was a mistake to hire Tubby. And so you could very well have a situation if Ryan were to leave, where you'd look back at these two 10-win seasons, and you'll say, Memphis never done that again. But you know what? If you win at a champ, if you get to a championship game, what matters is whether it's Ryan or someone else, that they continue to be at a very high level, because you want to be relevant for whatever conference realignment might be coming down the road, if there is any coming down the road. And right now, back to where we started this program, between Memphis football and Memphis basketball, things are looking pretty good. And that is to the credit of Penny, and it's to the credit of Ryan. All right. Moving on to the NFL, Jeffrey. That was, of course, a glorious. It was fun last night.
Mm-hmm.
Even I could watch that.
Yes.
It was relatively stress-free as the Bills roll over the 49ers. It is interesting. Sean McDermott, terrible coach, according to everybody.
Yes.
After a bye, 8-0.
I think it's 9-0. I think it was 8-0 entering yesterday.
Is that right? Now it's 9-0?
I think it's now it's 9-0.
And fifth straight division title, seventh straight win.
And I believe even in this fourth Super Bowl era, I don't think they went five straight.
Here's one of the little twists from that game. Okay, on the lateral play.
Yes.
Josh throws to Amari Cooper.
Correct.
Cooper laterals it to Josh.
Yes.
Josh scores the touchdown.
Yes.
In a moment of magnificence in the snow. Josh gets credit for throwing the touchdown pass.
Correct.
And he gets credit for a touchdown reception.
But he does not get a catch.
He does not get a catch.
Correct.
but he does, like, let's say he lateraled it to Shakir.
Right.
Shakir would get credit for that touchdown, and, like, you give
right.
two touchdowns of credit, even though one touchdown is scored.
Correct.
One for the thrower and one for whoever scores.
Correct.
Right? So Josh came into the game with 244 career touchdowns, the same as Jim Kelly. Okay? He then, with the pass to Mac Hollins, he gets to 245. With the other rush, he gets to 246. Okay? We got it?
Yep.
So he's now the all-time leading touchdown maker in Bills history. After that play, he was at 246. After that play, how many touchdowns does he have?
So is it touchdowns responsible for?
It's touchdowns.
So he should be, I guess, if it's TDs responsible for, because you're throwing Jim Kelly in there, I'm going to say it's 248.
That's what they said, 248. He got credit for two touchdowns on one play.
Yes. Because it's touchdowns responsible for. So there's a difference between touchdowns
scored is different.
Right. Touchdowns responsible for is a quarterback stat, mostly. So you count the passing touchdowns,
he
rushing touchdowns.
He is responsible for two touchdowns on one play.
Correct.
He had three touchdowns in two plays in about eight minutes.
Yes. MVP.
MVP, MVP, MVP. So there you go.
Let's not do this Saquon thing.
Other big news in the NFL.
Shout out to Bears fans.
Shout out to Bears fans. Like I said, Memphis fans should be happy. Bears fans, extraordinarily happy. It played out perfectly for the Bears, don't you think?
Yes.
And you had to fire his ass.
Correct.
You had to fire his ass.
Well, I mean, there's been, the stat going around was like there have been 221 coaches that had that many one-score games, and he is 221st in win percentage.
And then the reports from the locker room afterwards were like, the players are furious at him.
Correct.
Like, at some point, you got the sense that the Bears didn't want to make the change until after the season, if they were going to ever make the change.
The brass, yes.
The brass didn't. Like, they never had. They never had change.
This is the first ever
first time they
season,
ever had in season. But, like, that totally forced their hand.
100%.
And so if you're a Bears fan, you should be thrilled about that. The worst thing I saw was the hit on Trevor Lawrence. That was despicable.
So I'm with you. I think it's a dirty play. Where I have a little bit of hesitation is, and this is not Trevor's fault, I just see this play, and Trevor's basically going right up to the first down. And you're telling a defensive guy, keep him from the first down. Trevor kind of slides late. It's a dirty play. I'm not denying that. I just see this, and I just know this is another thing Mahomes is going to take advantage of. Mahomes is going to fake slide. It's when he gets by the sideline and he starts running, you think he's going to run out of bounds.
And then
nobody wants to have the Bengals play in the AFC title game. He's going to skirt around. And so it's another one where I think ejecting him was the right call. It looked like a dirty play. He has a history of dirty plays. We've got to do something about the quarterbacks faking stuff. Like, you know, I mean, this is the thing. Like, in college, we got rid of it. If you fake the slide, you're down. Because it was the Kenny Pickett play.
Well, and that's fully appropriate.
Yes.
If you fake the slide, you have to be.
I think it's impossible to play defense right now.
Speaking of the Chiefs, ridiculous. Yet another escape. yet another preposterous escape. The Steelers, by the way, not only beat the Bengals 44-38, 520 yards of offense, 414 for Russ.
Yes.
I saw an argument that it is literally the best offensive game under Mike Tomlin ever.
It was the most points scored in this series history.
He has, it was also, by the way, clinched his 18th non-losing season. It's incredible.
Guy's unbelievable.
Guy's unbelievable. Does this mean that Russ is going to be back there at a significant price? Because he's playing right now for $1.2 million a year. And, like, he looks like...
I suspect it's going to be...
the quarterback. It's a perfect offense. Like, it's run the ball...
and deep shot.
Play defense and deep shots. What's interesting is Arthur Smith is getting credit, and I think he should be,
for...
I don't think he even wanted him. I don't think he wanted to make the change.
I think he wanted the plus one in the run game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's doing a brilliant job with them, and this is working. And I actually now think they are a legitimate threat in the playoffs in a way that they weren't before. They aren't scary like the Bills and Chiefs. But listen, you still got Bills, Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers, Chargers.
I think so, yeah.
They could all conceivably go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
NFC, just two teams that could go to the Super Bowl?
In my mind.
I think just two.
I mean, I guess if you want to make an argument for the Vikings and the Packers, like, they Thursday night's like a big game.
They seem like a notch below.
The one thing that gives me hesitation about my beloved Lions is the injuries are really stacking up. And that's the other thing about the Bills. Milano comes back last night, and yes, obviously the conditions made it.
That was ridiculous running. No one could do anything.
The field was legitimately frozen. It looked like a rink.
They were practically skating on. It was preposterous. All right. Boy, big Monday. What's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. You will join the guys today on Jason and John. Joining me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company will be Coach Hurd. Jason Munns will join us during hour number one. DeMichael Cole is going to join Connor and George today.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.